ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Peter Loge, an associate professor in the School of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University and a political consultant. Peter has served in senior positions for Senator Edward Kennedy and three members of the U.S. House of Representatives and in the Obama administration. Peter has also led and advised a range of campaigns and organizations, put the first member of Congress on the internet, lobbied for America's funniest home videos, and was a chief of staff in the House of Representatives during the Clinton impeachment proceedings. In addition, his book, Soccer Thinking for Management Success, Lessons for Organizations from the World's Game, is set to be released this summer. Peter, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good. Thanks very much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So we're pre-recording this, but the World Cup will have just wrapped by the time this is posted. So I want to start by talking about your book, Soccer Thinking for Management Success, broadly. What's the premise?
It's the world used to look a lot like American football, with, you know, an individual decision maker would gather information, issue orders down the line, those orders would be executed, you get feedback back up the line, you make another set of decisions. The world no longer looks like that. The world is constantly networked and networked, things are always in motion, which looks a lot more like soccer. Soccer is really 90 minutes of systems thinking in action. And as a result, the most successful organizations, managers, and staff, you know, constantly are moving, they're making decisions, they're adjusting on the fly, which is a lot like what a soccer game looks like. So for me, modern world organizations, politics, business look a lot like soccer. And as a result, I think we can learn from soccer about how to succeed in business, politics, and elsewhere.
Right. And in football, you do have that American football. You do have the coach. It's really a coach's game. And would you say that soccer is a player's game more than a coach's game?
I think so. I think it's definitely more of a player's game than a coach's game. And football is just tremendously complex, and I'm a big fan. But it's different because you've got a set of decision makers who are isolated from the action, right? The thinkers and the doers are not the same people. Soccer, a good coach will align his or her players in a way that aligns them up for success. They set a tactical plan for the game. But then when the game starts, the coach is really relegated to screaming at people and making a handful of substitutions. And it's up to the players themselves to problem solve on the fly, which is why during a lot of this World Cup, you've seen a goalkeeper pull aside a defender. And things. You'll see forwards and midfields talk to each other, figure, okay, this person is not behaving in ways we thought they would behave, so let's shift so we can adjust to this. Or, hey, that person appears to be, that defender is really, for whatever reason, not closing down space quickly. So get the ball in front of me, I will move to the ball, the defender won't close me down, you can then make another run and I'll get the ball to you. And these are decisions that the players are making in the moment to solve the problems that arise in the moment, which if you think about it, is what we have to do in business, in politics, and in organizations all the time.
Right, sort of the game sense after that somebody has.
If somebody goes after you on Twitter, you don't have time to call the manager and say, hey, Twitter just said something, let's call a timeout. Like you've just got to respond.
Well, it's interesting then, because it also puts an organization, all of those team members have to really be on point. So what, are you a soccer player? What inspired you to write it? Or are you just a soccer fan?
I'm both. I'm a better fan than I am player, but I'm enthusiastic about both. I grew up playing the game before it was cool. There weren't youth leagues or anything.
Before it was cool in America.
In America. Right. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
We're slowly catching up.
Yeah. My English mother would have corrected me as well. I think it's a terrific sport. And Ben Olsen, who's the head coach at DC United, my hometown team, season ticket holder from the beginning, proud, if somewhat beleaguered DC United and now Wayne Rooney fan.
Apparently. I was just going to ask you about that. That's my next question. Don't jump ahead.
We'll get to it. But he, Benny's a friend. He's a really good guy. Wrote the foreword to my book. And he took over coaching DC United roughly the same time as taking over a leadership position at an organization here in Washington. And whenever we'd get together, we'd start talking about art. He's a big art guy. He's a painter and knows a lot about art. But inevitably talk about management. And he was facing the same challenges with his players as I was facing with my team organization. Mm-hmm. How do you get folks who've been doing things a certain way to do things a little bit differently? How do you motivate people? How do you get people to work together better, differently? And I ended up using his metaphors and his examples in my staff meetings.
Oh, interesting.
After talking about this for a long time, I thought, well, I'm going to write this down. I think it's interesting. My staff finds it helpful. So let's give this a go.
Right.
It's all down to Ben Olson. Ben is just an incredibly smart, incredibly nice guy.
So what, I mean, in terms of what would a reader take away? Like if a reader hasn't played soccer, I mean, I know that it certainly everybody I know does, but but that rare bird who doesn't, what can they get out of it? What is it still, are these metaphors still going to make sense to them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The book is not written by a soccer nerd for soccer nerd. It's written with, you don't have to be a fan, a serious fan. You don't have to be a player. You probably have had to watch your kids run around and chase puppies or butterflies on a soccer field. I've referred to some of the things, but by and large, anybody, this is a relatively straightforward metaphor. To test that hypothesis, I had a friend of mine give it an edit who's a massive baseball fan and really doesn't care about soccer. And he said he actually got a lot out of the book. Then another friend who was COO on the Obama campaign, who wrote a book about the management side of campaign management, actually read it ahead of publication, wrote a very nice blurb about it saying specifically, you don't have to be a soccer fan to get the lessons out of this book. You know, I think if you're a fan, you get more.
Right.
But, you know, in some ways, actually my friend who's a baseball fan said he learned as much about soccer as he did about management and enjoyed it both the whole way. So.
Oh, well, very nice. What a nice blurb. You've got your dust jacket is packed with happy things. So, okay, before we dive into thoughts about this World Cup, I'm curious about your thoughts about Wayne Rooney's move to DC United and what parallels to the business world you might draw there.
That's a good question. One is tempted to say that Wayne Rooney is the Joe Biden of Major League Soccer. Oh,
sorry.
You know, he had his great moment and the fans of both Biden and DC United, and I count myself as both of those things, hope he's got one last push in him.
Please, God, yes.
Please, let's make this work. Actually, a former player named Bobby Warshaw writes for MLS, had a really good analysis about Wayne Rooney that I took and turned into a blog post. Rooney presents an interesting management challenge because he doesn't enter an organization afresh, right? I mean, DC United has existed for more than two decades. It's had some glory years. It's won some great trophies. It's struggling now, but it has a U.S. men's national team player on it. It has some up-and-coming stars. The coach played in the World Cup and the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Is entering an existing system. And Olsen has to find a way to fit him into that system, right? It's not Wayne Rooney and 10 guys in shorts. It's 11 players who have to work as a unit. So Olsen has to make sure that Rooney's integrated. At the same time, he has to recognize that Rooney's special, right? He scored more goals than anyone else for both England and Manchester United. So at some level, the system has to adapt to Rooney, which is pretty similar to situations many of us have been in, not at the Wayne Rooney level. But if you're a consultant, you enter this position all the time.
Right.
And the organization will bring you in and tell whoever, you know, the marketing department, look, we've got this person. Here's this great resume. We're paying them a ton of money. You have to do what they say.
Right.
The manager will say,
after some heavy duty eye rolls, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We've all been in this. Oh, it's one of those people again. But
right.
The manager will say to the consultant, look, you're entering an existing system. This is a functional team of marketers that have been doing this for a long time. They were here before you got here. They're going to be here when you leave. So you, consultant, need to work with, not at, this marketing team. then you have to also say to the marketing team, look, we're bringing this outside consultant. It's really an opportunity for all of us to get better together and grow as a unit.
Right.
Right. And so it's a very similar challenge as a manager. That also means, though, for Rooney, and so far he's been saying all the right things, Rooney has to come in and say, you know, I am part of this team. I'm here to win championships. I'm here to help make everybody better. You know, his first press conference, he said, I'm meeting the players. There's video of him working out with the guys. Like he plays for DC United. He's got the Eagle crest on his chest, same locker room, the whole thing.
Right.
But he's
right.
And as a consultant or as a new senior VP or a new senior leader in an organization, you've got to do that too. Warshaw in his piece quoted another former player saying that he didn't care if Thierry Henry showed up to practice in a helicopter as long as he wasn't a jerk about it. So as long as he behaves as if he's a member of the team, everything will go well. It's a unique management challenge.
Showing up in a helicopter, though, it makes it a little hard for the team members, I would say.
Because apparently, if you do your job in the field, nobody cares.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I suppose that's true. Once you're in the game, it doesn't really matter.
One of the things I love about playing, I play a lot of pickup soccer, and I play in an over 45 league here in D.C. No kidding, the shirt sponsors AARP.
That's awesome.
One of the fields we play on is across the street from one of these big sort of step-down assisted living facilities.
Oh, gosh.
So if somebody goes down and grabs their knee, there's this fear that a golf cart's just going to roll across the street. One of the things I love about it is nobody asks you what you do. Or who you are.
Right. Well, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. Are you a jerk? Are you going to complete the pass?
Right.
You know,
right.
I mess up. Are you going to encourage me? You're going to scream at me. You're going to scream at me. I don't care who you are. Right. It's one of the guys I quote in the book. For the book, I talked to people who played soccer at every level who now run things. One of the guys I talked to in the book is a former Mexican ambassador to the U.S. Hmm. I met him because he was the goalkeeper on this over 45 team of mine. And I didn't know he was the former ambassador for 2 or 3 years.
Oh, wow.
See him playing a charity match. I thought, why is Arturo
playing in a charity match?
John Harks. Google him. Holy cow.
Right.
I want to know, are you a reliable goalkeeper?
Right. That's funny. Although the over 45, I got to just side note, my son was playing pickup soccer out on the fields of his high school. For hours they were playing and he came home and I said, oh, why are you home already? And he said, well, these old 40 somethings showed up. And so, you know, and I was like, oh, that's horrible. How painful.
Yeah. For them as well, I have to be honest. They probably, when he left, they probably all sighed, you know, at least he can stop running as hard.
Exactly.
But Ben Olson's actually a really good example of this. He plays pickup sometimes in one of the pickup games I play in. And he doesn't announce who he is.
Right.
He just, hey, can you jump in? A couple of us know him. Hey, you know, Benny, why don't you jump on such and such a side? Like, he played in the World Cup. We all watch it on TV.
Right.
But, and as a staffer, though, you need to do this, right? You enter a new organization as a staffer. If you could have worked for the Obama administration, you could have worked for the Bush administration. Nobody cares, right? Like, you show up with attitude, people are going to hate you no matter how good you are.
Right.
You're good and credentialed, and you show up and say, I am here to help everybody succeed to achieve our common goal, you'll be embraced.
Right. Very true. So it's been an interesting World Cup series, to say the least. And I'm curious, can you pull a couple of examples of things that happened that you think really support some of the ideas in your book?
Yeah, I think this has been just a remarkable World Cup, some terrific, terrific games. Also, I think some very good examples. One example is, the examples that jump out for a lot of people are, of course, Ronaldo and Messi.
It totally solved that debate in my house, but anyway, continue.
Which debate?
What's today?
No, which debate? Which debate?
Oh, who was better?
How?
Was the debate. How?
Yeah.
How did they, well, the kids, the boys, my boys debate. It was
and?
My younger one says Messi, 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 and my older one says Ronaldo, 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 and they decided that Ronaldo was doing a better job. You're disgusted.
He's a hell of a player, but I don't know, so is Messi. At any rate, but I think one of the lessons from these two players, if you look at the Ballon d'Or, the best player in the world, every year for the past decade, they have been either number one or number two in that list, with the exception of one year. Iniesta was number two
in
one of those years. And yet, Argentina and Portugal completely flamed out. And I think one of the reasons, one of the lessons for managers and organizations is it takes a team to succeed.
Right.
Right. It can't be, look, we've got this superstar designer, sales rep, marketing person, whatever. A well-organized group of people who are pretty good at their job and work together as a unit will beat a superstar and nothing going on around them every day of the week.
Yeah, well, basketball also comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very similar sport in many ways because you've got to, an organization is a group of people who have to work together. I don't care how good a writer you are. If you're not provided good stuff to write about, you will fail. If you're mm-hmm. a terrific researcher and you're producing, you know, economic reports or policy reports that are lights out brilliant analysis, but you can't, but everything's in the passive voice, no one's going to read them.
Right.
But somebody who's a pretty good writer, who's working very well with a pretty good researcher, will eat your lunch every day of the week. And I think Messi and Ronaldo proved that. Another is at the opposite end of the spectrum. If you have a team that works well together but doesn't have a plan, you're also going to fail. And I'm thinking of this mind-numbing Spain-Russia game. It was... This is my go-to line, that it was the PowerPoint presentation of soccer games. You just sat and you watched, and a lot of things were happening. You didn't know what any of them were. And at the end of it, you thought, I've just set 2 hours of my life on fire, and I'm unsure why. Spain fired their head coach 2 days before the start of the World Cup.
Yeah.
He was taking over a pro side. The Spanish Federation said, we don't want you announcing that before the World Cup. Fired him, promoted somebody from within the team. So now you fired your... Imagine if Apple fired Tim Cook 48 hours before the rollout of a major new product. The event would go off as planned because, you know, the room has been booked. But it would be flat.
Right.
Exactly what happened to Argentina. Spain, rather. That's exactly what happened to Spain. Spain completed more than 1,000 passes. Put that in perspective. The other game that happened that day, combined, the teams completed fewer than 900. Spain alone completed 1,000, but they're all lateral.
But why, if this is a player's game, why?
Because they didn't have, the plan was Spain. You go do your thing, you be Spain. So Spain passed, and tiki-taka soccer. But there was no plan to break down the defense. There was nobody saying, okay, you take the lead, you become the runner, we've got to do things over the top. Nobody gave direction, right? And so even at the halftime, my lovely young wife and I were watching the game, and at the half she said, surely the coach is going to tell them, you've got to make runs through the middle, you've got to put balls over the top, make the central defenders work a little bit. Came out after the half, and it was the exact same. It was lateral, tiki-taka, left, right, a little back. Nobody making incisive runs. And my wife is like, that's it. I'm going to go run errands. And I didn't volunteer to go run errands or watch House of Surgeons International or what, almost anything else. Because there was no matter how good the individuals were, nobody had a plan B. Mm-hmm. Right? And you see this in organizations and companies all the time. Look, we have a plan. We're all really good. We're doing our thing. We're a media company. We're going to produce a lot of good content. We're going to get it in our readers' hands. I'm writing, I'm producing, I'm tweeting, I'm putting it on Facebook, I'm sending it releases, I'm doing it on my podcast. We're doing great. You look around, nobody's reading our stuff. That's okay. We're all really good writers. And you keep doing the same thing again and again and again. And individually, it looks like it's working well, but it's not accomplishing it.
Well, in a way, your Apple metaphor, you know, Steve Jobs gone, Tim Cook, he's solid, but it's not setting any... It's a good team that seems to be...
Microsoft is another example. Microsoft hasn't innovated in forever. You know, they buy innovators. The other thing that I think this Spain game demonstrates, on paper, Spain like won that game hands down. Like, it's like a youth practice where every completed pass gets a point. Whoever has the most points at the end gets an ice cream cone.
Right. Oh my God. Or when you're slaughtering them and your mercy rules are that you can't score anymore.
Exactly. And so what was happening was they were mistaking motion for action.
Mm.
Right? It's they were looking busy. Whatever they're doing it really well. But the point isn't to do what you're doing well. The point is to win the friggin' game.
Right.
And organizations, you know, I was here at 7. I was checking email. I was reading the clips. I went to meetings. You didn't actually do anything.
Right.
Most successful people in organizations figure out the difference between appearing to be busy and advancing the organizational goal.
Right.
Spain was very busy and very good at being very busy, and they lost.
Right.
Russia did very little, but what they did advanced their goal and they won.
Right.
And you see this in organizations all the time.
Right. Well, how, I mean, I think what's interesting is also that you had talked about, you know, today's environment where you're leading and following and failure and fame are fleeting and things like that. But you also have this thing where you can be very successful, but static. And how do you, if you're in an organization, how do you take the temperature? You know, you've always been the best. You know, how do you realize that things aren't maybe working so well, and then you get surprised because you're beaten by somebody who shouldn't have been a contender? How do you fix that?
That's a good question. The first question is, how do you notice it? And that means you have to pay attention, right? You can't, you have to be willing to be honest about it. And in soccer, in all sports, that's easier than it is in business, right? In soccer, you can't hide slow.
Right.
I mean, this happened to me over the weekend. I tend to play outside back, and they were playing a team I had we hadn't faced before. And they had a forward who was just, his first step was incredibly quick. And at the half, I pulled aside by the defenders and said, look, this guy's just beating me on every turn.
Right.
What do I do? And they gave me advice and I did it. In business, it's to notice. You've got to pay attention to, are you getting new customers? Are you happy with where you are as an organization? How reliant are you on one or two or three clients or customers? You have to take that honest look. You have to be willing to be beaten. You have to recognize you're being beaten by somebody faster, right? So it's a level of internal honesty.
Right.
As a soccer player, if I say, no, I can defend this guy, don't worry about it, we're going to lose.
Right.
So you have to be able to do it. And then how do you adjust is another question. Then how do you adjust to it, I think, means recognizing that fame is fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Harvey, who was a goalkeeper on the first Women's World Cup winning team, told me she never learned, she couldn't think of a single thing she learned from winning.
I would agree with that. I always learned more on my losing teams than my winning ones.
You have to, because then you learn, okay, here's what I did wrong, here's how I get better, but you simultaneously have to recognize, and here Ben Oliver, who's a local soccer legend in D.C., National Soccer Hall of Fame, said, losing never lasts very long. You got to recognize, look, I'm getting beaten now, but I'll make these three adjustments and I'm going to win again, which means, you know, I need to sustain our margins. I need to pick up three clients a quarter because I'm losing three a quarter or losing two a quarter. To meet revenue goals, I pick up three. One quarter, you know, I picked up five. That's great. That was last quarter. What are you going to do to pick up three next quarter? Can't get overconfident. Simultaneously, you can't say, well, I only picked up two last quarter. I'm really bad. We're awful. No. We're going to go get three next quarter. Was it bad luck? Was it you're doing something wrong? What is it? You assess and you move forward.
Right.
And there's a risk of being an underdog, which I thought I had the same conversation with Ben, former head of a big advocacy organization here in town. They were both complaining that their players, from Benny's case and the staff in this other person's case, were so used to being the underdog that they didn't know how to respond when things were going well. Right. So if you're the underdog, you're told you're scrappy underdog, scrappy underdog, scrappy underdog, and you're succeeding, policymakers are paying attention, customers are buying your product, you're winning games, that's great. But the moment a bad thing happens, you lose a game, you lose three clients, congressman says no to you, you think, well, I was the underdog all along, I had it coming. This is no surprise. I was never that good.
Right. It's sort of demoralizing.
It's demoralizing. Well, it sets you back to what you thought you were because I was always the underdog.
Right.
Right. So it's just as risk confidence. You've got to be able to say, yep, I got here. I deserve to be here. Now, how do I get better? Okay. I got here. Now, how do I get better?
Right. Right.
You know, and you have to do that in an organization, in a business, as well as on the field.
In terms of thinking about also people and their skill level and moving pieces. In the spring, Arsenal parted ways with its manager of 22 years. Thoughts about that?
As he reaches for his Arsenal mug. I have to say, I come by Arsenal fandom. Honestly, my mom's family is from North London. I'm not one of these Yanks who looked around and said, oh, they won stuff. It was, I think, I should be objective. I'm, you know, promoting a business book, but we're not going to be that for a moment.
Okay.
Holy cats, that was long past due. Like, that man's sale date had passed. He changed the game in England, right? I mean, Wenger was a remarkable manager. He did some great things. He has great, great players and teams. But he wasn't making them any better. There's a really interesting show on NBC Sports. I don't know if they're still doing it. It was called The Pundits, right? And they had all the pundits. And it was a bunch of them at one point sitting around in the, of all places, Tottenham Hotspur locker room. I think it's a locker room. And talking about the best and worst managers that ever played for. And a couple of them said Wenger was the worst manager that ever played for. Which is weird to hear, right? Because Wenger's like won all this hardware. He's this, you know, vaunted, brilliant strategist. Because they said they never learned anything from him.
Oh, interesting.
Than better players. He got good players, put them in good positions, and told them to do their thing. But he never said, okay, shift your body 2 steps to the left. Or when this guy's coming down the flank, don't go out and chase him because he's going to cut inside. Or practice using the outside of your left foot. None of that. Right? Which I think is a very interesting thing. As a manager, then, you need to do the same thing. How do you, it's not just getting good people around you. Good people want to learn. That's what makes them good.
Right, right, of course.
Right? So teach them. Put them in positions to learn. Not just, don't just set them up to succeed and say, hey, you're really smart, go get them. It's, hey, you're really smart now. So the first time I asked Olson for management advice, I was just took over a senior VP position at a consulting firm. He was still playing. And I asked, what are the best and worst managers you've ever played for? And he said, the best managers, one of the things he liked about Bruce Arena when he played for Arena was when you did something well, Arena immediately pulled you aside and said, that was great. Now, build on it by doing this. When you did something poorly, he immediately pulled you aside and said, that was bad. Do this instead.
Oh.
So it was immediate feedback and it was direct feedback. It was never run faster.
Right.
Why did you just pass better? Well, if I could pass better, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right, right. Exactly.
It's immediate direct feedback, which I think is another interesting thing that's worth noting about Wenger. Wenger is an example, yet more proof that the best doers are not always the best coaches, and the best coaches are not always the best players.
Right.
I know your kids might argue about this, but Maradona is one of the handful of best players of all time. And he almost wrecked the Argentina's national team when he was the head coach. Because he once said, nobody told me what to do. I shouldn't have to tell Messi what to do.
Right.
But then don't coach Messi. Like, go back to whatever it was you were doing in the stands in Moscow. But Wenger, I think, played semi-pro briefly. Mourinho maybe played semi-pro. He calls himself a special one. Hell of a coach. Bruce Arena and Bob Bradley, the two best American coaches ever, at least to date, have played a combined, I think, 45 minutes of soccer at the national team level. Arena was in goal for a 1-0 loss to Israel at one point, I think. His playing career ended when he graduated college.
Right. So you need to have some level of...
You got to know the game, but you got to be able to get people to play it better. And you see this in law firms, political organizations, a lot of businesses. Hey, you're good at doing something. I'm not going to put you in charge of other people doing that thing.
So it's sort of the Peter principle.
A phrase I've never really liked, but yes.
I can't imagine why.
That and robbing Peter to pay Paul. I'm not a fan of either of those.
Sorry. It came out. I was like, that was just really not the thing to say. But yeah, it's interesting.
I think the new head coach at Arsenal is an interesting, I think it's an interesting choice. You know, he's had some success. He's had some not success. Seems smart. I talked myself into Arteta, and then the surprise other choice. But I think I'm gonna do well.
So, are you going to be happy? Do you think? I mean, just like if you're guessing.
As an Arsenal fan, I'm an Arsenal fan, a Red Sox fan, and a Democrat.
There you go. The trifecta of happiness.
And it, you know, there's so much talent. Spurs is an incredible team these days. You know, City, you look at the season City had last year. There's so much money. There's so much talent. You know, I'd love to see the Gunners obviously win it all. But what I really would like to see is an improved Gunners side. Team playing with a bit more spirit, a bit more bite, maybe a defender or two. You know, terrifically helpful.
Well, okay. Well, pivoting. Because we're because we're running out of time, and this has been so much fun, I have to say. You've had a diverse career. So in addition to playing soccer, how do you go from serving senior positions for members of the House of Representatives to a solo show of your artwork to publishing a business book? I mean, how does that happen?
I watched a lot of MTV as a kid.
Okay.
I have an incredibly short attention span. I've been very, very lucky. I find a bunch of different things interesting and I've been able to pursue them, and enough of them have turned into some money to allow me to keep doing this stuff. I'm very much though, in many ways, very much a soccer player, right? I see a system, I find a role in the system, and I move through the system. I'm
right.
The expert at anything. If I'm the smartest guy in the room, really that's the wrong room to be in.
Right.
It's the, how do you pull stuff and ideas together? My jobs in politics in the House and the Senate and the Obama administration required a level of knowledge of content, like, you know, Arena, Wenger, Bradley needed to know about soccer. But I was never the top policy guy at the Food and Drug Administration or in Senator Kennedy's office. What I was the person who knew how to assemble the parts to advance the goal.
Right.
I mean, the art thing is just, I don't know, that's harder to explain. But, you know, I'm a professor in the School of Media and Public Affairs at GW, right? My students and I talk about how you bring ideas together to explain them to people. How do people understand the world in which they live and work within that world? The worlds in which we live are our organizations. And I've been really lucky to be in senior positions at some big deal organizations. And I've seen how people behave, and people behave the same there as I behave when I buy a new car, as managers behave at organizations, as deans at universities behave, as my friends who run private sector companies behave, because we're operating with people, and people want to know on the field, in our organization, wherever, what's expected of me, what's this, what's our goal, right? What's the system? How are we as a unit organizing ourselves to accomplish this goal? What's expected of me in that system? Okay, now let's go do that. When I'm doing well, I need you to pat me on the nose and give me a cookie and say, that was great. Now do it again. And if I do it badly, I need you to pull me aside and say, now that wasn't so good. Here's how you do it differently.
Right.
That's
right.
Soccer coaching, that's soccer playing, that's management.
Life. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me in conversation. I'm looking forward. The book isn't out yet. I can pre-order it on Amazon, right?
You can pre-order Soccer Thinking for Management Success on Amazon. It debuted as the number one new release in the sports industry category.
Fantastic.
It'll be in mailboxes and bookstores and on your Amazon Kindle starting July 27. So
get your orders in. Operators are standing by.
Better yet, go to your local independent bookstore.
Oh, exactly.
And ask to order it. Let's support booksellers.
Let's do that.
If you're too lazy or you don't want to do that, please don't let that prevent you from buying my book.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for having me on. It's been great fun.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest, Peter Loge. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.